are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, May 14th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, White House reviews military plans against Iran as we remember the Maine. Also on the program today, Attorney General Barr assigns a U.S. attorney from Connecticut to investigate the Mueller investigation. And Kristen Nielsen, remember her? Well, she attempts to whitewash her record with reports that she happily worked for 18 months for a moral monster. And the first federal court ruling on Trump's subpoena avoidance due today. Meanwhile, the 2020 race. Backbenchers scramble with Biden's entrance as Sanders' support amongst young people drops in the first half of 2019. And the conservatives on the Supreme Court signal its willingness to breezily overthrow precedent. Ominous signs for Roe v. Wade. In New Haven, a mosque targeted by arsonists. And the third largest U.S. coal company declares bankruptcy. Thanks, Obama. Though, actually not. And in California, a jury awards $2 billion to a couple over Roundup cancer claim. All this and more, in addition to a look at the Subsys rap video, responsible maybe not directly, but indirectly for thousands upon thousands of deaths in 2017.
Little team building exercise.
Yeah, for the there we go. Nothing like, we'll talk about this. But I, as a young actor, I participated in a couple of industrials, not for a drug company, but for an insurance company. Where you, but we can talk about that another day.
I'm usually opposed to blaming rap for drug deaths, but in this
case, no kidding, right? All right, let's start first with I just want to get a couple of things off the table here, as it were, in terms of the courts. As you know, I tend to be a little bit focused on what's going on with the judiciary, because that is the one branch of our government that is much more difficult to fix with an election, at least short term. And the worst part, well, I guess as of today, of the Trump administration is ultimately the Trump administration's, and hand in hand, and in fact more so with Mitch McConnell in the Senate, ability to fundamentally alter the makeup of the federal judiciary, including the Supreme Court, but also the appeals court and the circuit court, and the implications that this is going to have for decades. Decades. Let's start first with the Supreme Court. Over the past week, we've talked week and a half, 2 weeks, really more by coincidence than anything else. We had on Robin Marty, was it?
Yes.
To talk about her book, a handbook for a post-Roe world. And I don't know if I got the title of that book correctly, but it basically explains what we're going to be looking at within a couple of years. And in the week and a half subsequent to that, we have seen two more states pass fetal heart bills, I guess, laws that have not gone into effect, but have fully passed both the legislature and have been signed by the governor. And these bills essentially say abortion is banned after approximately 6 weeks after a woman becomes pregnant. Now, most women who have become pregnant will tell you that they have not found out that they're pregnant until week 5 or 6 or 7 or after that. Because, of course, it takes a while. Unless maybe, I guess, if you're planning and you're checking vigilantly, you could find out before then. But 4 weeks is the normal menstrual cycle, and sometimes people are a little bit late. The point is that you actually don't have a fetal heartbeat. You have a functional pulse, essentially, because the organ of the heart is not fully developed at that point. It's not really a heartbeat, but nevertheless, it is a fetus. And these laws, that one that passed in Ohio over the past week and a half, one that passed in Georgia, the one in Georgia, a woman is criminally liable if she goes across state lines to get a legal abortion. There was a story in Alabama where a Republican lawmaker told her story of being raped as a way of getting a rape exception in the Alabama bill. And then she was targeted by a fellow lawmaker who is handing out basically a fact sheet saying that unborn children, in his words, should not be punished by because of the sins of the father or the parent, speaking of the rapist in that instance. And to further the point as to what we're going to be looking at, unless one of the five sitting Supreme Court justices gets hit by a bus, and somehow that vacancy will last until the Harris presidency or the Beto O'Rourke presidency or whatever it's going to be, or Sanders presidency or Warren presidency or, God help us, the Biden presidency. So that's the future that we're looking at. And the question has been, how will they attack Roe v. Wade? Will they simply chip away at it? Will they lower the scrutiny that the court will impose upon states' laws that infringe upon the right of a woman to choose an abortion? In other words, if there is a law, a trap law, that is passed, the famous one from Texas, which required admitting privileges by doctors within a certain distance of a hospital, or there are laws that have been passed that require abortion clinics to have like 16-foot ceilings or something to that effect, that are clearly designed to make it impossible to have access to an abortion on a practical level, or will they simply overturn it? Well, on Monday, yesterday, there was a case in front of the Supreme Court. It was involving a franchise tax board. And I'm not sure of the name of the case. But it was essentially a question as to whether states have sovereign immunity from private lawsuits in the courts of other states. Can I sue the Vermont Franchise Tax Board in a New York state court? In 1979, the Supreme Court ruled that there is no constitutional right for states to avoid liability in other courts, states, state courts. So this is a 40-year-old precedent, which was overruled yesterday by, in a 5-4 ruling by the conservatives. The fact that this precedent was overruled is not going to have much impact on our daily lives, because there's only been 14 instances in those 40 years where a state has actually faced a trial in another state. You follow that? But what the Supreme Court does is that they use some cases to create principles that can be applied to other cases. Sometimes they'll do it within the issue set. So they'll look at one limited case about abortion. They'll rule on one small thing that will have implications for a case down the road. They begin to build a record through their decisions. They create a series of assumptions or predicates for later decisions. Clarence Thomas wrote Monday's decision, said there was an implied right in the Constitution. These are literalists, incidentally, right? There's an implied right in the Constitution that means states could not be hailed involuntarily before each other's courts. States can give immunity to other states. They can get into compacts with each other. He said the court's decision four decades ago, in this case Nevada v. Hall, is contrary to our constitutional design and the understanding of sovereign immunity shared by the states that ratified the Constitution. Stare decisis, that's the idea of respecting precedent, does not compel continued adherence to this erroneous precedent. Now, put aside the quality of his ruling. He argued that the state's sovereign immunity is historically rooted principle embedded in the text and structure of the Constitution, although it was not explicitly set out in the text of the document. All right, but put that aside, because that's just the run-of-the-mill conservatives, originalists, and textualists of BS. We should only, the Constitution is only as written.
It's like a la carte.
Right. It's only as written unless we can see something that we can imply that's in there.
Then you use your common sense.
And then you use your common sense. All right, but that's not the issue. The issue isn't the nature of the ruling. The issue is the argument as to why they can reject and on what grounds. And this is going to be the new standard for this court. As long as five people determine it's erroneous, that's it. It can be overturned. Which, for lawyers and for judges, undercuts the fundamental point of the judiciary. It's not supposed to be a third house of lawmakers, right? It's not just a majority of people. It has to be because there's some type of legal rationale that makes sense. Here is Justice Breyer's dissent in Franchise Tax Board, and it is a warning. Some people suspect in terms of what could be coming down the pike in terms of Roe v. Wade. He writes, "It's one thing to overrule a case when it, quote, defies practical workability. When, quote, related principles of law have so far developed as to have left the old rule no more than a remnant of an abandoned doctrine. Or when, quote, facts have so changed or come to be seen so differently as to have robbed the old rule of significant application or justification. This is in the, he cites the Casey case. And those are three separate tests as to whether you can, you should or can overturn precedent. When the law simply doesn't work out the way that we anticipated and doesn't function, when the related principles of law have so far developed as to left the old rule no more than a remnant of an abandoned doctrine. In other words, all of the other doctrines around that law have made the original law seem archaic or nonsensical. Or when facts have so changed or come to be seen so differently. In other words, hey, gay people have the same rights as us, as straight people. Turns out black people are not second-class citizens or should not be second-class citizens. Or it turns out that, I don't know, maybe down the road in terms of what constitutes animal cruelty, if we find out that animals are completely, have a level of consciousness that we did not understand. Something like that. I'm not making any proclamations about that. I'm just using that as an example. He writes, it's far more dangerous to overrule a decision only because five members of a later court come to agree with earlier dissenters on a difficult legal question. The majority has surrendered to the temptation to overrule Hall, even though it is a well-reasoned decision that has caused no serious practical problems in the four decades since we decided it. Today's decision can only cause one to wonder which cases the court will overrule next. So he is basically saying this case is being used as a way not just to resolve a barely existing problem in our law as it stands now, which is whether a state can be hauled into court in another state's state court. But rather, it's being used as a tool to overturn the precedent of a different case, of future cases. It is being used as, and may not just be Roe v. Wade. There's going to be a long project for this conservative court. And if Thomas resigns this summer, and my guess is that's going to happen. My guess is he's going to announce in June, maybe even later. Because I think, you know, Mitch McConnell is going to replace him with someone younger. That is the end of the project, even if Donald Trump leaves at that point. And that's the project. To have a five conservative members of the court who are in their 40s and 50s, who will be there for decades to come, 20, really 30 or 40 years is the question, and will fundamentally change U.S. society. In addition to the Supreme Court, Mitch McConnell, once again, for those of you who have been following this over the years, there are two ways in which a minority in the Senate can stop the confirmation of a federal judge. One is to filibuster, and the filibuster is now gone in terms of lower court judges. And Supreme Court. So that is actually effectively gone. Excuse me. Traditionally, I meant to say. That's gone. The other way that was a tradition was that the home state senators both have the ability to withhold what is called a blue slip, which is basically like a sign-off on federal judges who are being appointed in states or in circuits or in regions that the state is included in. Yesterday, the Senate voted 54-42 to confirm Joseph Bianco, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit, based in New York State. Every Republican voted for him. Two Democrats, Doug Jones and Joe Manchin, voted for him as well. All the other Democrats either opposed or were not around to vote. Bianco's confirmation marks the third time in history that the Senate has confirmed a judicial nominee over the objections of both of a nominee's home state senators, Chuck Schumer and Kristen Gillibrand. They didn't turn in their blue slips for Bianco, and McConnell ignored that, whereas Patrick Leahy allowed that to happen multiple times. He is Donald Trump's 38th confirmed circuit court judge. That's more circuit judges than any president in the history of the United States has seated at this point in a first term. At this point, that one in every six seats on the nation's circuit courts is now filled by a Trump nominee. And this is pretty stunning, this complete domination of the courts that Republicans now have. Short of the First Circuit in D.C., which is, you know, probably the second most powerful court in the nation, Republicans are slowly basically taking over the judiciary. Not so slowly, actually, under Trump. McConnell has been just shoving these justices and judges onto the courts. And the bottom line is that Democrats not just need to win the presidency, they need to win the Senate. And they need to win it not just because you got to be able to give a Democratic president the ability to get judges passed through the Senate, but also from a structural standpoint, if they don't win it now, they have a very, very hard time to win it in the future. Which makes things like Beto O'Rourke running for president and Bullock from Montana, who just jumped in, running for president, and Hickenlooper from Colorado running for president. If you do not know the names Hickenlooper, or you only recognize it because it's a funny sounding name, or you vaguely recognize the name Bullock, it's because they're not going to win the presidency. But in Montana and in Colorado, those two could have possibly challenged effectively their state's senator, winning those seats for Democrats. Crucial, crucial seats. Texas is another one. How primed is Texas to flip in terms of the Senate race? I don't know. Let's ask Beto O'Rourke, because apparently how close they came in Texas in 2018 is the foundation of how he's going to win the presidency of the United States.
Everyone's important, everyone counts. And at the end of the day, more votes than any Democrat has ever received in the history of the state of Texas. Young voter turnout up 500%. Won independence for the first time in decades. And 500,000 Republicans in Texas also joined that movement. So a movement comprised not just of an expanded Democratic electorate, but a movement comprised of Democrats, independents, and Republicans alike. And now, for the first time in at least my adult lifetime, maybe since 1976, Texas and its 38 electoral college votes have been unlocked. They are in contention, and we will have a seat at the table.
Yeah, so this is him talking, pushing Beto 2.0. Apparently, they're relaunching. And I'm sorry. At one point, if we're to believe the soaring rhetoric about helping our country, but country first, I was destined to do this. If you're a candidate of destiny, is it your destiny or the country's destiny? Like, I mean, the unbelievable narcissism of people who purport to tell us that they're just so compelled to public service that they have to do this. And then using the Texas miracle as if Texas was a miracle, then how about you dig deep and run for Senate, even though it may not be the job you want? I mean, honestly, it really is. Like, I don't know how we're supposed to take seriously a candidate, and I'm not just talking about Beto O'Rourke. I'm also talking about Hickenlooper, and I'm talking about Bullock and others, frankly. If it's too much of a self-sacrifice for you to run for the Senate, but you think that it's that you're compelled to help the country by running for the president, you're full of crap. I mean, honestly, it's pathetic. It's disgusting. Because a Republican Senate is in 2020 is going to be devastating, going to continue to be devastating for the country, regardless of who's president.
It was for the good of my high school that I lobbied so hard to be prom king.
Yeah. Well, you really gave of yourself for that in that campaign. Meanwhile, let's just talk about this report about let's do the Iran stuff first. There was a report today in the New York Times that the White House is reviewing plans, military plans against Iran. At a meeting of President Trump's top national security aides last Thursday, acting defense secretary. We don't have a defense secretary, incidentally. We haven't had one for, what, over a year now? When was it Mattis was gone?
I think Shanahan was recently appointed. I don't know if he's been confirmed.
He's acting. Yet. He's okay. Acting defense secretary.
We're going to go back to calling it the Secretary of War.
He presented an updated military plan that calls for sending as many as 120,000 troops to the Middle East should Iran attack American forces or accelerate work on nuclear weapons. That's a big or there, isn't it? And it's also pretty vague. What does accelerate work on nuclear weapons mean? Does that mean accelerate work on weapons that could carry nuclear warheads? Does that mean accelerate work on potential dual-use enrichment of uranium? We don't know. The revisions were ordered by hardliners led by John Bolton. They do not call for a land invasion of Iran, which would require vastly more troops. So, I mean, 120,000 is just what you need if you're just going to stand by while you bomb Iran. It is unclear whether the president has been briefed on the number of troops or other details in the plan. Here is Donald Trump being asked if he was seeking regime change in Iran.
Are you seeking regime change?
We'll see what happens with Iran. If they do anything, it would be a very bad mistake. If they do anything, I'm hearing little stories about Iran. If they do anything, they will suffer greatly. We'll see what happens with Iran.
The Mad King has heard little stories about what they're doing in Iran. And, of course, one of those stories was that the UAE claimed that four ships were attacked the other day. One was Finnish. Two were Saudi. I can't remember what the fourth one was.
Emirati.
The story now is that the Finnish boat was attacked by something in the water. And that the Saudi boats, though there has been no pictures of damage done to these boats, there were no deaths, there was no leaking of oil, were attacked by something else that came from somewhere else, maybe a drone.
UFO?
Yeah, well, yes, of sorts.
In a certain sense.
But somehow they figured out that it's Iran or Iranian proxies, which could basically be anybody but the Saudis or the UAE folks, I guess, right? I mean, theoretically, it's all divided up into two. You're either on Team Saudi and UAE, or you're obviously on Team Iran, according to them. So there's a lot of vagaries, and Mike Pompeo, in a last-minute meeting change, apparently he's scuttling all over the place, head to Europe to talk to European allies on Monday. And presumably he was looking for some support, maybe. We don't know. But here is the EU response to their meeting with Mike Pompeo. This is Federica Mogherini in Brussels.
Mike Pompeo heard that very clearly today from us, not only from myself, but also from the other ministers of EU member states, that we are living in a crucial, delicate moment where the most relevant attitude to take, the most responsible attitude to take is, and we believe should be, that of maximum restraint and avoidance. Avoiding any escalation on a military site.
So, in other words, not interested is what the EU has to say. Meanwhile, Pompeo is to meet Putin today to ostensibly we'll be talking about that as well. We should say that Pompeo literally like crashed the Brussels meeting of the EU. They weren't anticipating him. They just showed up there. And presumably, maybe he has like special satellite images, because the satellite images showed no damage to the sabotaged Saudi ships. It could have been mental sabotage, emotional sabotage of the ships. That doesn't show up on
sonic
satellite
sabotage.
Pictures. There are some people who suggest that the military option that was offered, that is being reported now, to Bolton in the event of a non-ground invasion of Iran of 120,000 troops, is the military signaling to the civilian leadership, we're going to make this very hard for you. We're going to tell you that you need 120,000 troops, which is a lot of troops, to do whatever it is that you think you want to do. So good luck marshaling those forces, and good luck marshaling the public opinion that is necessary for that. There was an interesting piece that this guy, Mika Zenko, wrote in Foreign Policy. This is back in 2012. I think I saw this on Twitter, where he suggests that there are different times where the military frames decisions of presidents by offering solutions to what they want that are either discouraging or encouraging. So, for instance, you want to be the general who the Bush administration embraces, you go and say, we can do this. 100,000 troops, 5 or 6 days, we'll wrap this thing up. you know, the toughest part will be getting the candy and flowers, you know, scraped off our uniforms when they throw it to us in Iraq. Or you can be General Shinseki and say, this is going to cost trillions of dollars and we shouldn't do this. And then you can then get summarily sent out to pasture. But that is basically...
This is so deep. It's a deep state.
Yeah, exactly. So that's possibly what's going on now. And, I mean, the one thing that the Trump administration seems to keep proving over and over again is that they're really unqualified, even in pursuit of their own decrepit agenda. And so hopefully their incompetence will win the day. Bolton, as much as he is positioned, presumably, to get his way and to convince Trump of something, hopefully won't be able to do it. But we shall see. I don't think, you know, Brendan asked me when we came in today, do you think like the public has an appetite for this? And my answer is no. I'm not convinced that they understand that in the White House. And I don't know that that would be a deterrent. And I don't know. I mean, right now you have Marco Rubio calling for an investigation, calling on Barr to have an investigation of John Kerry's meeting with the Iranians, trying to convince them, I guess it was last year, not to allow the U.S. The U.S. is pulling out of the Iran nuke deal to force Iran to pick up their enrichment of uranium again. He wanted to convince them to hang in there and essentially, you know, work with the Europeans. And Rubio wants to investigate whether John Kerry broke the Logan Act. And I'll tell you something. It's so perverse because there's so many instances of people breaking the Logan Act. I mean, Trump, I think, you know, arguably did during the campaign. Certainly what Flynn did in the run-up to the Trump administration taking office seems to have broken the Logan Act. Jared Kushner broke the Logan Act. Others.
Is Eric Prince part of the Trump administration?
Eric Prince. I mean, this happens all the time. Now, usually it's for really horrific things. I think the Reagan administration, the people did too, is with Iran. Henry Kissinger, right? In the Paris peace talks.
Yeah, the Vietnamese Paris peace talks.
Usually when people break the Logan Act, more often than not, it is to encourage killing and more war. John Kerry was trying to salvage a deal with Iran that basically, at the time, eliminated an enemy of the United States. I mean, made you know, at least a one that could create real danger in the world. But of course, Marco Rubio, one of the good Republicans. Let's just take a look at this before we go into the fun half. In the fun half, we're going to talk about this. There's a criminal case. Four or five, I think, defendants found guilty in the marketing. Really, I mean, marketing is, I think, I'm underselling it, of Subsys, which was a version of fentanyl, essentially, that has been tied to the deaths of tens of thousands of people. But like even the last year, I think 28,000 people died of overdose related to synthetic opioids. And it really is horrific. It's the perfect metaphor for the pharmaceutical industry. We will get to that. We'll also talk about the big story in BuzzFeed about this 14-year-old white supremacist, I guess, at least. I don't know what you would call her, alt-right, YouTuber. You know, more fodder for my understanding as to why we focus on YouTube to the extent that we do. But here is Donald Trump. He is welcoming to the White House Viktor Orban. Viktor Orban is the far right wing leader of Hungary. You remember the that Sepp Gorka, his dad, was part of the fascist crew in Hungary. I mean, there's a nice tradition in Hungary for far right
hierarchy respecters.
Yes, exactly. Hierarchy respecters. And Orban has basically staked out the most anti-immigrant immigration and immigrant position in Europe. He his party ran on a almost an exclusively anti-immigrant platform. The they have passed or they have promoted a new bill known as the Stop George Soros Bill. It's part of their electoral campaign that many perceived as classically anti-Semitic.
It's the
old school.
Was that conservative from PodSave involved in that?
Oh, is that right?
Was no, he, I don't think he actually was.
No. Old school stuff. Does Donald Trump have a problem with this? You decide.
Respected all over Europe. Probably like me, a little bit controversial, but that's okay. That's okay. You've done a good job and you've kept your country safe. We'll be discussing NATO. As you know, Hungary is a proud member of NATO. And we
Pause
are.
It. He's kept his country safe from. Is there some type of invasion of Hungary that I'm not aware of? Oh, apparently there is. Continue.
We've really gotten to know each other a little bit. We'll be discussing trade, very much so, and lots of other subjects. We'll be meeting with representatives of Hungary later on with the Prime Minister, and we'll spend some very good time together. So, Mr. Prime Minister, thank you very much for being at the White House. Thank you very much. It's a great honor. Thanks.
Moments later, Trump was asked about the reports of the of democracy itself backsliding in Hungary. Apparently, Trump not so worried.
Are you concerned about democratic backsliding in Hungary under this prime minister?
Well, people have a lot of respect for this prime minister. He's a respected man, and I know he's a tough man, but he's a respected man, and he's done the right thing, according to many people, on immigration. And you look at some of the problems that they have in Europe that are tremendous because they've done it a different way than the prime minister.
There you go. Tough man.
Respect. But
by did it a different way, I mean they let Muslims come there.
That's right. Big mistake. Big mistake. All right. Well, we're going to take a break. Head into the fun half of the program. Michael will join us when we get to the fun half. Oh, he doesn't want to hear it, folks. He comes in. I love it. He comes in already annoyed.
Oh, no. Happy to see you guys.
Happy to see you guys. Just feeling like a dog.
Hmm. All right. Oh, great. Are you okay? I can't come in today.
Stop. Oh, Jesus. I thought I got out of the office sickness unscathed.
Yeah. Well, that mundositis. It's really tough. And Tuesday.
What is situs?
Monday situs.
Oh, Monday situs.
I had to get a Mondayectomy.
Yeah.
Like, is your sickness only active on Mondays?
That's really weird. all right, we're going to take a quick break. Just a reminder, your support is what makes this show possible. You can become a member of the show by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, not only do you support the free show, not only do you get extra content every day, but you also get that content commercial free, and you keep this show alive. So join themajorityreport.com. Also, Just Coffee, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. And Michael, oh, you're here. So I guess the show is happening tonight.
Oh, no, it's canceled. Psych.
Oh, all right, great.
No, Emma Vigeland will be in. And it'll be a great show. 7 o'clock, Michael Brooks Show YouTube channel, patreon.com.
Sounds like it's going to be great. You sound really up for it.
I'm working on it. I'm going to drink a bunch of, what is our sponsor again?
Liquid IV.
Liquid IV. I'm going to pump myself full of Liquid IV.
That we all drink all the time.
It's going to be great. 7 o'clock, Michael Brooks Show on YouTube, patreon.com/TMBS. And next week, we're going to do the food bucket. To celebrate the 2,000 patrons.
So. How are we cooking that stuff?
We're going to have to. I don't think we have to. It's ready to go. Survival bucket, bro.
Survival.
Just pick it out of the bucket.
You may not have a heat source.
What we're going to do is we're going to order.
What do you think is raw?
What we're going to do is we're going to order Chipotle and pretend it's the food
bucket. What do you think is raw?
Like, whoa, this food bucket tastes pretty good.
I was hoping
tastes like
there
a burrito
was,
bowl.
I don't know. Can't you, like, beef jerky or something like that? I mean, I guess you don't have to
You're
going to
cook beef jerky?
Yeah, good point. I was expecting it to be, like, sort of burrito bowl type stuff. Maybe heat it up in a microwave
really
or something.
That this...
All right, good.
No,
but
it's like dehydrated eggs.
Michael, I found out how we're going to make it go viral on YouTube.
How?
Is we tag it with the term mukbang. Mukbang. Sorry, mukbang.
This is a good idea.
Because that's a South Korean thing that they just film them eating and talking, and it goes, it's like hundreds of thousands of views.
I don't necessarily know that I want that to get hundreds of thousands
of
views.
No, we do. We definitely want it to get hundreds of thousands of views.
All right, beautiful. Let's do that. And
Don't forget, check out patreon.com/theantifada. Jamie is also ill. She's got Tuesday-itis. And Matt?
I do my illnesses over the weekend, like a good worker.
Very inefficient.
I have a feeling you're going to have a Wednesday appectomy.
Yeah, but that's a scheduled one.
Wednesday-ectomy.
I'm going to take Michael down. Literary Hangover Hiawatha, we are closing up on 200 for patrons. We're going to do Margaret Fuller, who is an early socialist and feminist. I mean, you probably put the feminist part first, but she became a socialist in the 1848 revolutions. A lot of people don't know about her, so we're going to try to bring her to more and more people.
She was part of the Concord crew.
She's coming
right?
back.
Yeah, but she outgrew them. Emerson was sort of like stuck in his individualist thing,
right.
and Fuller was even romantically a little bit tied to Emerson, although nothing happened. But then Fuller outgrew Emerson's individualism when she was in Europe. So we're going to record that on Wednesday, actually. So look forward to that. So patreon.com/literary hangover for those guys.
All right. See you in the fun half, 646-257-3920. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Think good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2. 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd,
don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.